Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail, companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop, and hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Jordi Murphy, CEO of Phobisoft.
Years ago, I read an article that when there's, say, a downturn, you have so many companies that start cutting. But a lot of those companies that survive and come out when the economy comes back up are the ones that didn't cut. They'll spend a little more. They'll look for another opportunity. And that puts you ahead of all the competition.
This is Jordi. After 3 decades as a successful restaurateur who owned one of San Francisco's top 4 restaurants, Jordi sold his business and relocated to Florida. Despite having no software background, he identified a critical gap in the market while cycling one morning in 2014. Inspired by Steve Jobs' philosophy that if you can identify a problem and solve that problem, you have an opportunity, Jordi founded Phobisoft with the vision to change how restaurants manage finance. And what started as a self-funded venture with manual data entry evolved through persistence, strategic pivoting during COVID, and finding the right technology partnerships. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Jordi to my podcast. We explored a counterintuitive approach he took to scaling a vertical SaaS business when everything seemed to collapse. While many companies cut back during COVID, Jordi doubled down on technology investments. His journey reveals how industry expertise combined with technological innovation created a solution that convinces the moment people see it. His methods challenge conventional wisdom about rapid customer acquisition and demonstrate how focused simplicity beats feature complexity, especially in specialized verticals. By listening to this podcast, you will learn 4 things. Firstly, how deep vertical expertise can compensate for a lack of software industry experience when building a SaaS company. Secondly, why doubling down on product quality during market downturns positions you for accelerated growth afterwards. Thirdly, how to create a systematic customer journey that increases retention after experiencing rapid growth challenges. And lastly, why understanding your ideal customer profile prevents wasting resources on prospects that cannot benefit from your solution. Well, hi, Jordi. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure on my side as well. I'm actually looking forward to this because what you're doing for restaurants is what I would almost call like an ERP for restaurants. It's running, making restaurants run a properly financed, managed business. And of course, people that know me, I come from the ERP space, which was a little broader from a vertical perspective. But yeah, I always admire people that actually have the guts to say, I'm going to niche down and just be for a small group of people. So that's what intrigued me to invite you or to have this conversation. I saw that you founded Phobisoft in 2014. I saw also that you got 3 decades of experience in the hospitality or in the restaurant industry.
Right.
So we have an expert here on the call. But before we start talking about the business, what drives you? What gives you energy as an entrepreneur?
Well, knowing the restaurant business, that's what I've been in my whole career. And being able to help people in the industry really drives me because when you look at the industry in the United States, there's in the neighborhood of 800,000 restaurants. And there's so many people that have gotten into it or fallen into it or whatever that haven't had the proper training. And that's one of the reasons that it has a bad reputation of you know, X amount of percentage restaurants go out of business every year, which is true. But that problem exists because, you know, if you could take a person that was a waiter and then he became a manager, and the next thing you know, he's the general manager and he's got the checkbook and he's, you know, in charge of a business that's doing $2 or $3 million a year, and he's never had any training in that industry. So when things, you know, someone says, I need to buy the new RoboCoop in the kitchen that costs, you know, $1,800. Okay. You know, they don't run with budgets, et cetera. So it drives me to help people. Plus, it's my passion, not just from the business standpoint, from the culinary standpoint. I mean, I cook 6-7 nights a week. Like, we cook dinner parties. You know, when you own restaurants for as many years as I did, it's just, it's in your bones, you know.
Well, you did pretty well. I mean, I saw some articles whereby you were one of the four best, what is it, in all of California or in San Francisco? But
in San Francisco, top four restaurants, San Francisco.
Exactly. And I saw a couple of names that, I mean, I live in Europe, but I saw a number of names that actually even I know. I mean, Wolfgang Puck's. So yeah, fascinating. And that is what creating the, yeah, maybe the best software companies to understand their customers like no one else. Because I can say, yeah, but the system that I used to be, well, head of product marketing and product strategy of, we could also do restaurants. Likely you could find 100 reasons why we were going to go and be, well, 80% yes, but the 20% that we were missing is going to be the 20% that matters 80%. And that is true, you know? And that's the power of niching down. So, okay, let's wind back to 2014.
Yes.
What was the big idea behind the company? What was the problem that was screaming for something new that wasn't there?
Well, here's what happened. I when I left San Francisco, I was a partner in a group of 6 Asian noodle restaurants. I sold them back to our Taiwanese partner because I got married, moved back to Florida where I grew up to raise our kids. I'm a cyclist and a swimmer, and one morning I was cycling, and what had happened in the time between moving from San Francisco back to Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida, I started a company called Cypress Hospitality Group that's still in existence. We're headhunters for the hospitality industry, chefs, managers, et cetera, all salaried people. So I'm running Cypress, but friends of mine from the Bay Area would call and say, you know, I'm opening a restaurant. Would you run some numbers for me? You know, I've got a problem here. Would you look at my P&L? Because I came kind of known as the numbers guy in San Francisco. I mean, I knew I took Coletto's from a restaurant that was doing $2 million, losing $200,000 to $8 million, making 24% profit. So, I mean, people were kind of like, this guy knows what he's doing. So I'm cycling one morning and I thought, you know what? And I still cycled the same route. And I know right where it hit me. I said, I'm just going to do this. Because I had a process for running restaurants, and it's kind of a daily sales report. And so that day I went into my office. I started making phone calls to find a programmer, because the thing is, you know, it was just recent that the advent of the cloud. So it couldn't have been done before because we didn't need servers and all this other stuff. But with the cloud, when I found Raj, who's my partner today, I, you know, gave him the ideas, and we just started putting it all out on a huge whiteboard, and we built the first version of Fovisoft, which at that time, it was all manual entry. You had to enter your food, beer, wine, liquor sales. You had to enter your front of house, back of the house labor. We would build the salaries in behind and the payroll taxes and workers' comp. Then you had to enter a whatever invoices you got that day. So from, you know, 2014, you know, fast forward to, you know, I was just bumping along. I was financing it myself. I had no investors. We started bringing customers on, and they were, it was like starting to work. It was like, wow, this is working. And then the pandemic hit, and we lost everybody. So I found, we lost, every restaurant in the United States closed. So I found a small group of angel investors in Winter Park, Florida, that gave us some money, and it afforded us the ability to start building more on technology. So now today, Fovisoft it's almost completely seamless. We import from the point of sale system, the food, beer, wine, liquor. We import the front of house, back of the house labor because the salaries are built behind workers' comp, et cetera. And then we have EDI connections with all the major broadliners, Sysco, US Foods, Bon Appetit, et cetera. And for someone that might not be using a big broadliner like that, we built a, with Microsoft Azure and our technology team, we built a piece of AI, which is the big term these days, that you take a picture of the invoice, it uploads to the cloud, and it parses to the cell, and it's 97% accurate. All we have to do is read an invoice one time. You could write ahi tuna on a napkin, and it's going to scan it, you know, map it, put it in the right place. So now we're giving someone, our clients, a profit and loss statement every single day next to the budget. It runs month to date. And like I said, it's red or green. If it's red, you have opportunity. And if it's green, you're doing well. And that gives them the information they need from day one of the month to manage to the bottom line and hit their budget. And that's how we increase the profit of restaurants.
Yeah, that's the way it works at the end, right? It's not at the end of the month, a couple of big things, but it's the daily day-to-day tuning. By the way, I like how you phrase that. If it's green, you're doing something right, and if it's red, you have opportunity. So yeah, many people say you have a problem, but what I also like, and people, I mean, this is of course an audio podcast, but there's the screen on the wall is Fobisoft P&L's served fresh daily, which I like because it's got this connection with the restaurant.
Well, one of the things that hit me is when I was cycling that morning is I was listening to Steve Jobs' book. And he made a comment in the book that if you can identify a problem and solve that problem, you have opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we adopted that term because there's a huge problem still today, and it's going to exist forever, in the hospitality or the restaurant business, because a lot of people look at it and go, well, that's a fun business. I ran this company here. I could get in the restaurant business. But they don't realize there's so many moving parts. And the restaurant business is a business of pennies because there's so many different categories of spend.
Yeah.
And we see examples every day. We had a client that we brought on a while back. They're doing $1.5 million a year.
Yeah.
And they had one category called supplies. In that category was $360,000 of expenses. So at the end of the year, you're looking at a number like that. It's like, oh my God, what is it and where did it go? And it's you're way too far gone to, you know, you have to start anew. And I'll tell you what we did with that client. We right off the bat said, let's do a budget with $260,000. And see if they can hit that budget. We increase their profitability $100,000 from day one, just by breaking everything out and categorizing it correctly. Yeah. And that's, you know, when someone has an idea, it's halfway through the month, and it's like, can I go buy this, you know, these new sheet pans I need? Well, look at your kitchen supplies. Do you have enough money? You know, can you get by another week and buy them next month? You know, it helps with your cash flow also.
Yeah.
If you pay attention to it, you're going to become more profitable.
Exactly. Funny. Well, knowing the ERP space, knowing the finance management space, I still see posts on LinkedIn, posts from the vendors that they're so proud that their customers have now reduced month end close by 2 days. Now it's instead of 8, it's 6 days, for example. Well, you do daily, sort of the daily close. What makes it so hard to do it daily?
I think because there's so many, and that's what initially was a struggle for us. There's a lot of information there.
Yeah.
You know, and whereas you a couple of years ago, you could just get what your sales were out of your point of sale system. A lot of people still use time cards. So it wasn't, you know, they weren't logging in with a computer and they didn't get their labor through an app that you could get at the end of the day like that. You know, a restaurant gets 6 or 7 or 8 invoices. Someone would have to sit down with those invoices and log each one. But now with you know, the EDI connections and the AI feeds and the importing from the point of sale and things like that, that's what's made it easier. But you still have to pay attention. Instead of, you know, saying it's 15 or 20 minutes, maybe a little more, if there's a bunch of invoices of somebody's time, you still have 5 or 10 minutes. But if you're running a 1 million to, I mean, we have clients that are doing $8 and $10 million in their business. Don't you think it's worth 15 or 20 minutes a day?
Exactly. So look at that's the way it works. So going back then to, 11, what has been an early decision on this journey of solving this problem that appeared to be extremely important for the success you have today? Was that the daily P&L or was it some other decision?
Well, the most important thing that we do is we put things in categories and we teach people how to take little bites. Mm-hmm. If someone looks at their P&L of a restaurant and they just look at it, and a lot of times it's not even calculated correctly because restaurant profit and loss statements are different from manufacturing profit and loss statements because you've got your food costs, your liquor costs, your beer costs, and your wine costs. So it's food divided by food, beer divided by beer, liquor by liquor, wine by wine to get your cost of goods. Yeah. So number one, it's understanding it correctly. And, you know, we make sure that's the first thing we do. Like we had a client, I don't know, a couple months ago, and he was all proud. He says, I'm running a 31% food cost. And I said, yeah, you are on total sales. But off your food sales, you're running a 43% food cost. Thought the guy was going to have a heart attack right there on the Zoom meeting. But we taught people how to take little bites, you know, find a point in your cost of goods, find a point or so in your labor, find a point plus in your controllables and a point in your non-controllables. And if you're making 10% profit and you found 4 points, all of a sudden you're making 14% profit. Yeah. So you've increased your profitability by 40%. And there's a lot of situations where you've got someone that's flat, that's not making money. So when you can sit there and do that, you can take them from nothing to make 40% or, you know, 4% profit. I mean, that's impactful. You know, we had a client tell us, he says, not only did you make my restaurant more profitable, you turned my manager into an operator. And that's what we, you know, we open the eyes of the managers today because, you know, a lot of these managers aren't getting trained. They're getting thrown the keys and say, you know, you're the most competent person here. You're my new general manager. Well, if they don't have that education or they don't have that knowledge, and it's not their fault, they're working hard. You know, a lot of them work 50, 60 plus hours a week. You know, it's not for, it's for lack of not wanting to know, but nobody's ever taught them. And that's the other thing that we do is we teach people how to understand a profit and loss statement.
So what I understand, what I hear here is on the one side, you deliver a piece of technology, but you say that's not enough. We have to go beyond that. We also have to become the guide for our customers.
Right. Well, we're like, I used to joke that I wanted to be the KPMG of restaurants. You know, if you have a problem, give us a call. Let us know. Let's see what you have. You know, let's dissect it. I mean, I've been lucky enough to have been exposed to so many restaurants through my career. And now, I mean, I can take someone's profit and loss statement and just look through it, recategorize it, and I can find money on pretty much anybody's profit and loss statement. We have a client with three restaurants and they are making 18% profit, which is like amazing. I mean, that's like the top of the heap. We got them to 22. So, I mean, that was a hard squeeze to find three or four more points out of someone that's making 18% profit.
Yeah. And that's fascinating. Of course, that gets you out of bed in the morning, right? To make that impact.
Yeah, it does. And now, I mean, that's the other thing, speaking of getting out of bed. With our platform, the people that are on it, they can get out of bed and pull their phone out and see how the restaurant did yesterday and know exactly where they stand. They can start their day. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, how did we spend this much money on X yesterday? And they can be on the way to work knowing what they have to do already, which is.
It's powerful.
Cool. Yeah, it is. It's powerful.
Yeah, exactly. So you started 2014, product came on the market, 15 or so?
I would say it took us a couple of years because I was financing it myself.
All right, And then you said, okay, so we got customers and then COVID hit and everybody.
COVID hit, we lost everybody.
Everybody.
You know, we got a lot back. We got, you know, as restaurants started open, but it was about a year plus. And then we found a small group of angel investors in Winter Park, Florida, that gave us enough money to really start getting into the technology where there was a lot of the manual entry just went away. We are right now probably 95% seamless, where it's imported from the point of sale system. You know, yeah, we built API connections, et cetera. So,
so now, you use that that point of slow business to strengthen yourself that when you come out of this issue, you come out better stronger. I mean, I'm writing my second book, which is about remarkable resilience, and I'm always after stories about how not only survive a crisis, but actually come out stronger altogether. And I think that is where your story starts here. Right. So why did you decide to kind of double down on those elements and not on something else?
Years ago, I read an article that when there's, say, a downturn, you have so many companies that start cutting. You know, cut the marketing, cut the this, cut the that. But a lot of those companies that survive and come out when the economy comes back up are the ones that didn't cut. They'll spend a little more. They'll look for another opportunity because it's not going to, like, it's going to stay down. I mean, as it starts coming out, and that puts you ahead of all the competition. So when we started doing this, it's like, okay, what pieces are what's number one, what's number two? And we just categorized and systematically built our connections, the integrations, et cetera. And that's what I think helped catapult us. And we also, we white labeled the product for a company here called Cisco Foods. So, you know, having them as a partner was just tremendous there. You know, we work with a bunch of great guys there and women, and we got exposure to some of their customers, and that helped get us back, you know, to where we want to be.
Yeah. So what I read online, I'm not sure. I got a couple of points on you on that. You currently have 1,000 restaurants and you're adding about 60 to 80 new clients a month, which is fantastic because it means you're sort of doubling the number of customers almost every year. I always am interested in those scale stories. Well, first of all, let's start at the point where COVID stopped and your customers start coming back. What did you learn in that period? What was a challenge that you didn't see coming that or you overcame in a way that made a difference?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. Like, we brought a lot of customers on too fast. And because as we were bringing them on, we were maybe not holding their hand enough and sometimes promising technology we were working on that wasn't finished yet. Yeah. So as because you're so excited and you're bringing these people on and there's interest and you're saying, we lost some of them because we're saying, the EDI connections will be done in the next 30 days. Well, with technology, that 30 days could turn into 60 or 90 days, et cetera. And the thing is, though, is that, we're upfront with our customers. Some of the things that we wanted to do that are done now weren't necessarily done. And we're so excited because it's being worked on and we're seeing, stuff happening, but it wasn't necessarily happening fast enough for the customer. So that was one of the, an issue that we had.
Let me make a small interruption here. Jordi just made an excellent remark that sets his growth apart from typical SaaS scaling. The realization is not about promising technology that isn't ready, but about systematically supporting customers throughout a defined journey. That change not only leads to better retention, but also creates authentic relationships in an industry where trust is everything. It's a trait remarkable SaaS companies master. They acknowledge that they cannot please everyone. They aim to be different, not just better, and they create momentum. For example, by reminding customers about their value and regular timeframes during the month. And you can master these traits as well. The first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview.
What did you learn from that? I mean, what if you would do it again, how would you approach it today?
It's funny, John, you asked that, but I don't know if we would change. What I would probably do is emphasize more of the support team to hold the hand more. What we've done is we, you know, from that point, we came up with what's called the customer journey, which we didn't have before. So now we know, you know, you bring a customer on, we have a P&L meeting with them, we have a budget review with them, you know, we train the managers, we, you know, then now we have touch points that we touch back, you know, we get back in touch with them if we haven't heard. We also today will, for a ton of our customers, we ping them on the 7th of the month and the 21st of the month and send them a dashboard of, here's where you are, this is where you should be. And we're doing all this through AI. So, you know, and that's been just overwhelmingly positive, where people are like, oh my gosh, you know, thank you so much for sending me this. Now I've got my marching orders for the next 2 weeks or so. Because the thing is the industry is a head down. It's a crazy industry. You know, we have a client, I like to tell this, the guy was so excited to sign up with Fobisoft, but he didn't have time because he couldn't find a bartender and he was tending bar, lunch and dinner, 6-7 days a week. So finally, when he got a bartender, because the labor market's kind of crazy in the industry now, he got the bartender, we signed him up and he's been great. You know, I mean, we have a person that we just did a testimonial from and sent out there, you know, before we were doing X amount of revenue and barely making, you know, ends meet. Now we're doing X amount of revenue. We're making 16% profit. That's just huge.
That's crazy.
You know, when you, like I said before, like the client that said, not only have you made my restaurant more profitable, you've turned my manager into an operator. Yeah. And that's, you know, and the difference is, for those that might not understand, you know, a manager is the guy that's going to come in, unlock the door, count the money, put it in the thing. You greet all the guests, you know, at the end of the day, counts the money, puts it back in the safe and locks the door. An operator is going to be, you know, he's going to unlock the door. He's going to look at the facility. Okay. Did anything happen last night? Is the whole place clean? Blah, blah, blah. You know, he puts some money in while things are going on. He's looking at the invoices and the products that are coming in. You know, he's checking everything. And those are the people. And then at the end of the day, you know, especially with Fobisoft, he can say, okay, you know, my linen and laundry is, you know, X percentage over what it should be. What can I do to fix that? Yeah. And we have these bouillons that pop up that offer suggestions. Like, you know, one of the ones I love to tell people, you know, well, how can you decrease your linen and laundry? Well, you lock it in the office. Really? And you give someone one apron and two towels a day that works in the kitchen. You know, because if you leave the big bag sitting there, they're probably going to change your apron once or twice a day. They're going to use three or four towels. Yeah. By the end of the month, it's, you know, if you're getting charged 3 or 4 cents a towel, all of a sudden that adds up. You know, when you compound it on a year, little things like that make a huge difference.
A fascinating example of what it means, what you actually can start to do when you actually niche down and really speak the language of a vertical. Because, I mean, something like that, it's, for example, at Unit 4, if we would be able to guide people, it would always be in a generic way. And a generic way, it maybe applies to one, but it doesn't apply to the other. Right. The moment you've done 10 of those, it's like, okay, it's useless. I can't work with this. But for a small restaurant business, you can wow them every single message that you send them, which is fascinating. Question that I have on the, well, we talked about the scaling thing and what you learned from there. I'm sure that you're not the only software vendor that is targeting the restaurant business.
Sure.
So what are you doing specifically to ensure that you stand out, that you differentiate amongst the right type of people?
We're simple. You know, a manager could quit on Friday and by Monday afternoon, we've got the new manager trained if he comes in Monday morning. And that's one of the main things that we do. We don't have all these different metrics and all these different things in there that are giving you all these different numbers, because personally, my feeling is, as a restaurateur for my whole career, you don't need all that. You know, it's like, here's my sales, here's my cost of goods, this is what my labor's running, these are my controllables, this is how much money I'm making. How can I whittle the middle? And we make it simple. and we put it next to a budget. So you have a baseline. Because a lot of people can look at it, you know, there's a lot of, there's technology out there that's going to give you a dashboard every day. You hand it to a manager that might not be trained or might not understand the numbers, and it doesn't mean a whole lot to them. But if you hand them a dashboard that's next to a budget and said, your number is X and it should be Y, anybody can see, okay, what do I need to do? You know, a classic example in the restaurant industry is at the end of the night, you're closing and there's two or three servers and a bartender that are left over while the manager's closing up, and they're sitting around having a shift drink on the clock. So you're paying them after they finish to sit around and have a beer. Well, if a restaurant saves an hour a day in the front of the back, in the front of the house, and an hour a day in the back of the house, they're going to save about $16,000 to $18,000 a year.
Yeah.
That can pay rent for a couple of months.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that. And that's what I was saying, is that there's so many moving parts. And that's why turning a restaurant manager into an operator is so important. Yeah. So they understand that. So they're just not sitting around shooting the breeze as they're closing the restaurant with two or three people. That's going to add up to 3 or 4 hours, and it's going to cost you another $100 in labor costs, which you didn't need to have. Do that every day, and it's $3,000 in a month.
Correct. Correct. It's fascinating how, I mean, this whole story, I think, is all about, you know, it's the little things that matter. And I mean, for a restaurant business, it matters a lot. Another question that I have is around the scaling part. It's because, you know, 1,000 customers is, of course, that's is a good size. And then adding 60, 70, 80 a month on top of that. So what obstacles that you had to overcome yourself within Fobisoft to be able to become more scalable? You said already, I think, how many restaurants are there in the U.S.?
800,000 restaurants in the United States.
Yeah.
Our issue, is visibility. People don't know we exist. And that's one of the things that we're constantly working on from a marketing and awareness point. Because we close around 40% of the demos we do, which someone might say, well, that's not very much, but the reality is, if someone demo, that's huge. That's a huge number. So, you know, we'll close 4 out of 10 demos. But it's the exposure, because like I said, again, you know, people in the restaurant business, it's head down. They're in the four walls trying to get 20 or 30 minutes of someone's time to show them what we do is difficult. And it's a little more difficult because we're talking about something personal, the finances of the business.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get someone to have a conversation about that. If you walk in and say, hey, look, I know how to get more butts in the seats because I'm Mr. Marketing Guy, they want to say, okay, well, you know, what do you have? And they want to hear. But if you're talking to a restaurant guy and say, well, what are you doing for your profit and loss statement? How often do you get them? You know, why do you want to know that? I mean, so it's that piece there that's a constant challenge to overcome, is getting someone maybe to say, let their guard down and be honest. Because every single person, whether they sign up with Fobisoft or not, every single person since day one sees the value in it. And when someone sees it, you wouldn't believe how many times we hear, if there's a couple people on the demo from their side, it's like someone will say, we need this. You know, you know, to people that maybe be a salesperson or whatever that sees what we do, it's like, I wish I had that when I owned a restaurant. It's things like that. Things like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, the visibility, I get that. And if you build a business on the right technology, I mean, it can scale from 1,000 to 2,000 to 10,000 customers and so on. Right. But what have you learned in terms of that? Do you do more outreach, or are you focusing more on inbound?
It's a combination of the two, but I think the outreach, and it's paying attention to the people that we've demoed that might be on the fence. You know, we're using an email platform, but we don't blast the emails and bombard somebody's inbox. We only deal with people that have opted into our platform, you know, to the email platform. And, you know, once a week we send them a reminder, or we give them an example of something we've done for another restaurant, And I'm more than happy to, and occasionally get on the phone with, you know, with the client themselves and discuss their profit loss data. We had a recent one about 4 months ago. We had a new employee and they said, you know, can you give me your version of how you do this? And I said, fine, go get four profit loss statements from four customers we've signed up, shoot them to me, and we'll go over them and I'll show you. All four of those profit loss statements were incorrect from a restaurant accounting standpoint. From the way some, think about that. Like one person categorized their sales instead of food, beer, wine, liquor. It was Visa, MasterCard, American Express, Discovery. Well, and then their sale, their cost of goods were by the vendor, you know, Cisco, US Foods, et cetera. Well, you're never gonna, I mean, you're starting off with the premise right there wrong. So it's things like that. It is what it is.
Yeah, but that's of course where vertical expertise plays a lot of, you know, creates a lot of value. What are aspects that your customers get fired up with?
I would say the visibility. We had a client say, he had a restaurant for 20 years, still has it. I've never had the visibility of my business like I have today. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think fires us up. But it's also, let's look at it our way. You know, they refer to it, and I don't like to say this, but the team refers to it in the Geordie way or whatever. But let's look at it the Fobisoft way. And open their eyes to a different way of looking at things. Because, you know, it's a lot of people are running off Excel spreadsheets or whatever. You know, we have a guy we demoed. They have 16 restaurants, and the owner came up with the Excel spreadsheet and was so proud of it. But they have 16 people going into that spreadsheet every single day. So the cells get changed. It gets, you know, the things just gets cattywampus for the director of operations. He says that he spends an hour every day fixing the formulas and the spreadsheet so he can get the information he needs. So it's things like that. It's the visibility, and it's showing someone a different way to look at things. And it's giving them a baseline. Nobody runs with a budget these days. Nobody really knows, or they might stay at the beginning of the year. A lot of the corporate restaurants say, you know, here's your monthly budget, but they don't break it down every day. They don't run it month to day like that.
Exactly. It's like it's easily forgotten. Well, I've got a question on the segmentation side of things. Like, who do you focus on? Because, I mean, a lot of companies will already say, okay, well, you're focused on the restaurant business. That is already extreme focus. And you already get customers or organizations asking, can you also make this available for another industry? Well, I mean, your market is large enough to keep the focus there. But also, have you possibly even focused or niched down even further within the restaurant industry where you say, okay, well, for these type of customers, we're perfect. And for those, yes, we can help you, but it's likely not going to fit.
Well, it's more of a volume lever. You know, I mean, we help restaurants that are 800,000 and above. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, because when you get below, say, $600,000 or $700,000 in revenue, there's not a lot of room to find things. And those type of restaurants are basically, you know, a job. But our focus, see, what we've done with the platform is we've made it, it's about 90 to 95% customizable. So you could be a juice shop and we could call the labor person juicerista, which we have one client that does that. So we name it that, but instead of food, beer, wine, liquor, they have food and, you know, non-alcoholic beverages. Yeah. So it's, you know, not to say that we can't, you know, we pretty much accommodate almost anybody as long as you have a little bit of volume, you know, 700,000, 800,000 and above, we can definitely help you.
And what I like about your approach at the end is that, yes, I mean, someone with a credit card and someone with that can pay for the subscription, you could say, okay, well, that's a good customer. But what you're always going for, and that's keeping coming back in this interview a couple of times now, is, okay, it needs to make, we need to make an impact. We need to be able to find profit. Right.
Right.
And I think that's a very good, well, that's applaudable because you start to measure your success by the success that your customers are having. And if you cannot give them the success, you'd likely say, I'd rather not, because you're too small at the moment to make this make sense.
Right.
I like this.
Right.
Yeah. So talking about success, over those years that you've now been running the company, Fobisoft, how has the definition of success for your company evolved since you started? Has it always been like it was right now, or has it evolved in the meantime?
Oh, no, things have changed considerably. I mean, when you end up, you know, we've got 10 sales team or, you know, support team, or we have, you know, the tech team in India, that, you know, plus my partner that lives here. And it's, I mean, it's changed. I'm probably more involved in the going forward strategy now than, you know, doing demos. But I'll still break down someone's profit and loss statement like that and help them out. I mean, that's the piece that I enjoy. But yeah, it's looking for the future. It's, you know, how do we get the, you know, what are the harder issues or some of the bigger groups that might not have anything? And, mm-hmm. you know, here there's this, and I'm sure you've seen it too, this huge email bombardment of, it's just, I mean, I must get 50 a day of people telling me that they can get me leads and blah, 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 blah. It's just, it's mind boggling. So it's made it more difficult to get in front of some of the people that are the decision makers. And then again, you know, like we have one person that we've been speaking with that they had 10 or 15 restaurants when we started conversations, and they're up to 40 or 50 now, and they run lean, and it's a great company, but trying to find time to get in front of them again has become more difficult, and they're interested. Sure. They comment, well, that's what, you know, we need this. It's like, well, take a deep breath and let us sign you up.
It's funny, huh?
Yeah,
it's all about the little details, and they, yeah, it's where do you put your effort? But at the end, you know, if the software that you buy from you pays it back and it's actually helping with making the company even stronger and growing it faster, yeah, why not? Make
priority for that. Well, at $200 a month, just us organizing you is going to make you more than $200 a month.
For sure, exactly.
Right, and you put it next to a budget. So it 100% pays for itself. But here again, you need the active participant being the client that's going to spend 5 or 10 minutes a day, or, you know, 20 or 30 minutes a week paying attention to their finances. It's the most important thing in the business.
Yeah, exactly. So how do you get around that, you know, to make it urgent for them or to get their attention that they are? Yeah, reaching out.
Maybe. I think that what we're doing with, you know, with pinging people on like the 7th and the 21st, with here's where you stand, here's where you are, staying in front of them. And then, you know, I mean, like we'll do podcasts, you know, and send those out for people to see where we are, et cetera.
Yeah. No, it makes a lot of sense. I like your example of the 7th and the 21st. First of all, they start looking out for it, possibly. But it reminds them about the value that you give them as a system. I mean, I'm actually still amazed that not many more software vendors do that. I mean, I use quite a lot of tools these days. The only one that actually has done it but sort of stopped it again is, for example, Superhuman, which is the email tool. They gave me a monthly output in terms of how much faster, which part of the Superhuman group I belong to in terms of power users, how much hours I saved during the month. Couple of these wishful, well, things that sort of amaze you and surprise you in a nice way. And I mean, if you just look at it, you've got all the data in the system. The only thing you have to do is to make it available to people and to kind of put it in front of them and say, you're doing actually pretty good. And here's where you can actually do a little bit better.
Exactly.
How much more? You know, that is the most fantastic marketing campaign you can imagine.
Right. I mean, we're giving them visibility that they haven't had before.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
We're like putting it in front of them a couple times a month. You know, yeah. I mean, eventually, would we like to eventually maybe do it, you know, once a week after, you know, 7, 14, 21, and then the end? Yeah, but, you know, we start slow with little things like that.
As long as it's relevant.
Right, exactly.
Exactly. Then it's top of mind. And you can give all kind of nuggets there. But looking at the time, from 14 till today, 2025, 11 years in business, running the business, thousands plus customers. What would be a do and what would be a don't in terms of advice that you would like to give to other tech entrepreneurs?
I mean, I think to do, you know, I was a restaurateur and I entered into the SaaS business not knowing anything about it. So, you know, to do would be find a mentor in the industry or someone that maybe's done it. And a don't would be don't think that you know everything and find that person that can help move it along. I mean, because I've often said that, you know, I mean, I'm a restaurant guy. If you want to build a restaurant, operate a restaurant, whatever with a restaurant, you know, I'm your guy. But we've been in the SaaS business now and we've been somewhat successful. You know, we're trying to, of course, grow, but there's probably some mistakes we've made along the way because we're all restaurant people. I mean, you know, as we move forward, we'll probably look for a person that's the SaaS person that's done this before. Because it's just easy. We have a great opportunity. I mean, with a total addressable market of 800,000, I mean, it's massive and it's needed. I mean, this is, you know, what we do is needed in the industry.
Yeah. Wise advice. And I agree, you know, find a mentor. And the other thing is the mindset. Don't pretend that you know everything because you don't. You're doing things that have not been done before. And even though you understand your vertical market, there's always things that that others know better. And of course, you're also too close to the problem yourself.
Right.
And I see this with my mastermind every single week. All the aha moments that we've seen there is amazing. And sometimes it's right in front of you and you just don't see it. And when you got a peer or someone that is in the same shoes, but that doesn't have your problem because it's not his or her company, they come with suggestions or anecdotes that make you think, wait a minute, why haven't I thought about it myself? So that is hugely important. Well, thank you very much. Where can people go to find out more about Fobisoft or to say hi to you?
Fobisoft, I should have said this at the beginning. Fobisoft is food and beverage software. Fobisoft. So it's Fobesoft.com. And my email address is GEO, as in Jordy, GEO at Fobesoft.com. GEO at Fobisoft.com.
Yeah.
And I'm more than happy to talk to anybody, give them a demo or look at their P&L.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jordy.
Pleasure to speak to you.
Thanks for sharing the wisdom and good luck on the next part of the journey.
Right on. Thank you very much.
And this ends my conversation with Jordy, and I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspires you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Jordy Murphy, founder and CEO of Fobisoft. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas. And that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.